There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to the, what is this, the 53rd episode of the 45th? I don't know, I'm losing count. But anyway, Rabia Chaudhry here. I'm here, as always, with my colleague Susan Simpson. How you doing, Susan?
I'm good, Rabia, but I've got to say, it's probably the first time we record the 45th where I really didn't want to.
Why?
Because I was listening to Sean Hannity have a meltdown on his radio show just now, and I had to stop listening to this podcast.
Is that right? Oh, my God. Is he actually having a meltdown? I have not been
following. He's having a meltdown. Wait, I'm going to turn on right now and see if it's going.
Okay.
Let's see. He was definitely melting down. Have you heard any of what he's been saying? Well, let's back up for a bit. For those of you who may have missed the news roughly like 2 hours ago now, the mysterious third Michael Cohen client was revealed.
Right. Well, let's take one step further back from even there. There has been an amazing hearing happening all day today. And that is related to the seizure. Remember, like, you know, the raid and the FBI seizure of Michael Cohen, who is Trump's personal attorney, all his stuff, you know, they took his stuff from his office, his home, all kinds of shit. He filed a restraining order, and then the president actually filed a motion to be an intervener in the case, meaning I have an interest in this matter. The court allowed it. Yesterday, there was a letter from Trump's attorney saying that basically, we talked about this last week, that what happens in a case like this, he's saying that this is there's going to be like a violation of the attorney-client privilege, but what happens in situations like this is there's something called a taint team that is, I love that name, a taint team that basically goes through the documents for before they hand them over to the investigators, and that taint team makes sure that there are no privileged documents that they're going to be handing over. They give those back, right, and then they hand over what is response, or, you know, what they're looking for without the privileged stuff. Now, in the letter filed yesterday with the court, Trump's attorney said, well, the taint team has a bias, basically. Like, they are also with the Department of Justice, and they are also connected to... I mean, basically, he's saying the Department of Justice can't be trusted to do this right or ethically.
I mean, worse yet, at one point, they were saying, like... I think it was Cohen's letter. He's saying, oh, we need to, you know, have the special master appointed here because it'll protect the DOJ from, like, attacks right on their partisan nature. Like, well, who's doing those attacks?
Exactly. And so a special master is basically, it's like, it's a court appointed third party. It's usually a lawyer. And what they'll do is they apparently kind of oversee and make sure all the judge's orders are being followed. So they want like this extra. But even before that, what Trump was arguing was you need to let us do the privilege review. Now, that normally happens when there is a subpoena situation, right? I mean, this is pretty common.
Yeah.
Right?
People, when you have a subpoena, you have time to go through and you can like declare a privilege log and say like, here's the kind of documents we're withholding for these reasons.
Yeah.
But this ain't a subpoena situation.
Nope. Nope, there's a raid, bitches. That's what I tweeted earlier. No, this is not a situation like that. And the reason we know they did that is because they don't trust him to turn over the documents that they're looking for, that they actually are entitled to in this investigation.
They did ask him. So like October, months ago, they asked if he would hand over certain documents. And the request excluded privileged documents. And still Cohen said he wouldn't. So... Mm-hmm. I guess they're doing it this way.
Well, so what happened in the hearing, basically, I mean, and there's a couple of people who are live tweeting the hearing, which has been fascinating to watch. I've been watching this guy, Adam Klasfeld, who you can also follow and see what he tweeted the whole thing. But what happened was, you know, the prosecution, me and the government's arguing that, well, listen, this guy doesn't even, you know, what kind of privilege? A lot of these documents are not being privileged. You don't even do a lot of legal work, Michael Cohen. You know, you've only got three clients. And so the two clients that were initially publicly made public were Trump, obviously, and Elliot Brody. And should we remind everybody who Elliot Brody is?
He's the one who is, he's like on the RNC Finance Committee. And he's also involved in several of like the bigger like non-Russia scandals currently investigated at Mueller. Mm-hmm. And he also paid off a woman he had an affair with $1.6 million after
through
she had an abortion.
Cohen was his fixer as well. And it turns out he's also like Donald Trump Jr.'s fixer too. But anyway.
You see the letter that Brody sent out too? Like he admits the statement. Like it went out of its way to point out that she was like a Playboy model. Like, really? That's you're going to make sure that you get that in there in your letter, apologizing for, like, what you did to your family. Like, but by the way, guys, she was a Playboy model.
I couldn't help myself. Is that what the argument is? I'm a little confused here. We went... you know what? In the situation with the president, we've got, you know, a porn star. And so people don't care. I mean, like, people are more concerned about the unethical behavior here. So anyhow, there was apparently a third client. Cohen only has three clients. And that third client, they were trying to keep confidential. The judge said no. And so the name was announced in open court. And apparently a gasp went through the courtroom. Surprise, it was Sean Hannity. And so
apparently
we come
someone shouted, holy shit.
Did somebody shout holy
shit? Yeah, which is not normally acceptable in the courtroom. I figure in this case, the judge is going to overlook it.
So I have not, I followed it up until there when it was announced. Then I had to like do some work. And so I haven't been following Sean Hannity's reaction. But can I just say this? If we know at least two of the clients, the kind of stuff, the kind of work that Cohen was doing for them was like fixing payoffs for like their affairs. I'm guessing Hannity maybe have something similar arrangement with him.
So here's what he has said so far. Let's see. Okay. I'm going to turn this on, see if, let's see. This is currently the Hannity radio show. It's not quite what I was hoping. Okay. But earlier.
To Iran and to Russia, I ask.
Nope, he's moved on. Earlier, he was talking about how, and he was very confusing about how he phrased things. It was like, oh, I never use Cohen for like a third party matter, implying I never used him to pay off someone I like had an affair with. And he said like, oh, I just call him up from time to time and like ask legal questions. He never sent me an invoice, never sent me a bill. There's no like agreement or anything, but it was definitely privilege. I wrote down because I was so shocked he said this. He said, we definitely had attorney-client privilege because I asked for it.
What?
Yeah, he's like, we were talking. I call him up and have a question and be like, hey, Michael Cohen, should I, you know, have some legal question? And he gave me an answer. And that's
can you turn on the privilege switch, please?
Yeah, this is privilege, right? And we say, yeah, this is privilege. And that's how it was. which, okay, that's not how privilege works.
Right.
And then later on, he started talking about how, like, oh, he may have given him, he'd give 10 bucks to Cohen and say, like, I definitely want privilege this time. Okay. So here's my first thought, and this is like completely jumping right ahead to the conspiracy theory zone. But are we sure Sean Hannity is the third client? Because he is not a client by any sense of the word. He did say in court that he was the third client, but he wasn't actually a client. And they could just all be idiots who don't know what a client is, so I can't rule that out. But it leaves me to wonder if this was really the third client. They had to give a name because the court made them say it on the spot. Mm-hmm. So they said Sean Hannity because maybe they knew that he would be willing to go along with it and they wouldn't have to reveal the name of the third person.
But the thing is, if they're lying, I mean, right now, you know, Mueller's team has seized all those documents. They'll know if whether or not that's the third client and they can always tell the judge this is a lie.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to go well for them, but it could be a delaying tactic. So, you know, maybe not, maybe they're, but like, this is not in any stretch of the imagination an attorney-client relationship based on what Hannity's saying. Now, Hannity could be lying on a show, so maybe that's what they're referring to. Like, maybe that's what the issue is that there really was an actual relationship here. Mm-hmm. But until we hear more, I'm gonna maintain reservations that this is the full story on who Michael Cohen's clients were.
I think if he is the third client, it's gasp-worthy, and if he's not, it's the same. I don't know what's more shocking. But apparently Stormy Daniels also showed up today at the hearing with her attorney.
The Stormy Daniels thing is still kind of all over the place because guess what happened in the civil litigation out in California? Cohen pled the fifth and said they couldn't continue the civil suit because he, and you know what, that's valid. You can invoke the Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination in a civil suit. But keep in mind.
Wait, can you explain the civil suit, what's happening actually there first?
So it's gotten pretty complicated, but initially Cohen brought an arbitration through his company, the payoff company, EC LLC, against Stormy Daniels. She then filed suit in California State Court saying that was not a real agreement and you can't force her to arbitrate. Then Trump joined the suit after they removed it to federal court and trying to get it removed from there to arbitration again. Meanwhile, Stormy filed a defamation claim against Cohen. And so this all started as like a claim that Cohen claimed was like totally irrelevant and like a, you know, hatchet job, whatever. And now he's saying, oh, it's so serious that he has to plead the fifth.
He's pled the fifth. I do believe the president has tweeted before about people who plead the fifth and how it's a definite indication of guilt. But anyway. All right, so what do you think about the legal arguments that are, I feel like they're in full panic mode when it comes to this, the seizure of this big cache of documents. And I wonder, I mean, at this point, they can't start reviewing them, right? Like, they have them, but they can't start reviewing them until the court rules one way or the other, right?
That's my understanding. I'll admit, there's been such a deluge of information. It's kind of hard to keep up. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. We know, actually, we've gotten leaks about what's in there. So they're looking at some of the stuff, clearly. We know, for instance, that there's recordings of the phone calls between Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels' earlier attorney, the one he repeatedly has represented clients with Cohen in cases. And is very shady and likely, basically, it seems like kind of a scam job between Cohen and Davidson, the first attorney, who are securing these payoffs and these NDAs against women who've been wronged by Republican people, Republican leaders.
Republican leaders. But was that really a leak? I thought it was something that Cohen himself or his, like, somebody on... Like,
that's true.
So his people actually said that, oh, there are... Like, he made that admission somehow that I've had recordings and they took those too.
There was a reporting for sure that at least the recordings included that. Mm. So, but here's the other thing. We know that, like, when this all started going down, Cohen and Trump talked on the phone.
Okay.
So maybe that one's recorded and maybe that one they now have.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think Cohen's going to cover his rear end. But, you know, I mean, the meltdown that's happening, the panic with the Trump team and... the other clients, maybe I don't think it's going to be directly related. It might be, but it's much bigger and broader than making payoffs to mistresses or to, you know, women they had affairs with. Cohen is a fixer on a lot of things. You know, apparently Cohen also is the one who's like fixed deals between Ivanka and Don Trump Jr. and like the whole family, you know, the kinds of crappy business schemes they have all across the globe with all kinds of shady people. This guy has done the fixing on a lot of that. And in the New Yorker, an essay noted, and I thought this was really interesting, so I was just going to read it for our listeners. It says, Cohen was the key intermediary between the Trump family and its partners around the world. He was chief conciliaire and dealmaker throughout its period of expansion into global partnership with sketchy oligarchs. He wasn't a slick political who showed up for a few months. He knows everything. He recorded much of it, and now prosecutors will know it, too. It seems inevitable that much will be made public. We don't know when. There will be resistance and denial and counterattacks, but it seems likely that when we look back on this week, we will see it as a turning point. We are now in the end stages of the Trump presidency. I felt good reading that.
Well, okay, so there's... Adam Davidson's great. I think the article's spot on a lot of ways. I think he's right in terms about the legal ramifications and how we're going to fast forward through a lot of stuff now. At the same time, Trump's base, and by that I mean white people, by 53% of white people in the U.S., most of them know that he's, you know, a sexual harasser, that he's a grifter, that he is making profit off the U.S. expense right now as in office. They know all the bad things about him. They know he was crooked as a politician or as a businessman, and they don't care. So I don't think showing even more of that is going to make them care that much. And there's no.
No, I don't think it's so much that. I don't think it's just that, you know, he does shady shit. I think there might be actual criminality involved in these business dealings, and that's what's going to get him.
But that's not going to get Trump. They'll take down people around him, but it's not going to take him down.
Why wouldn't it take him down?
Because he's the president, and like right now, the current DOJ policy is they don't indict sitting presidents. They're
right,
not allowed to.
Okay. Well. Okay. So
he there's nothing he could do. He could literally shoot that guy on Fifth Avenue, and
like
Republicans would not impeach him. They would not, flat out.
Speaking of which, Trump did exercise presidential power last week. That I felt like is a little bit of a signal to other folks going down in flames. Is that he pardoned Scooter Libby? And what did you think about that? I thought the timing was interesting.
I mean, it's just the idea that in our justice system, the people who are really, really bad off and really hurting are the white old dude political powerhouses. They're the ones who are getting mistreated by the system. Like,
That injustice is really against them.
Yeah, glad you finally noticed that there's problems in the system here, but I think you vastly misidentified where the problem is. Like the way Trump was talking about the pardons, like I've heard that he heard that he was like hard up or like it was like unfair to him. So I wanted to make things right. And I'm like, I know a few people who you may have heard of that have gotten, you know, the bad end of the justice system. Maybe you should fix that first. But obviously this was clearly directed towards people in the current. I mean, it was Manafort. He was telling Manafort, stay strong.
Right, exactly. Has Trump been tweeting today? Because if he has, I'm wondering if it's about the hearing or about this interesting interview that Comey gave last night.
I have not checked because I have been on the road. Let's do a Trump Twitter check.
Let's do a Trump Twitter check.
Let's see what we got.
Right.
Did you watch the Comey hearing last night?
The hearing? You mean the interview?
Hearing. I can't even talk right now. I'm too excited from the hand in the news.
I actually didn't. And the reason I didn't was because I think I was, I was putting the baby to sleep. A really, really important task. Yeah, but I was following it online. People are live tweeting it, so I was following it there.
Got two tweets. One of them is pretty strange. Okay, the first one is, Russia and China are playing the currency devaluation game as the U.S. keeps raising interest rates. Not acceptable. I don't think that's...
But that was earlier this day. That was 8 hours ago, and it's 4 p.m. now. So that was before this hearing started. So he's been kind of quiet, basically, all day. Before that, he had one more around the same time, and about Comey.
And then he had one more. Yeah, the Comey drafted the crooked Hillary exoneration long before he talked to her. Quote, parentheses, lied in Congress to Senator G. Graham. Then based his decisions on her poll numbers. Disgruntled, comma, he, comma, McCabe, comma, and others, comma, committed many crimes.
That's a lot of commas. I think, I don't know, he's up in his grammar game here. Somebody else tweeted
that. Yeah, that's a crime against grammar right there.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that he hasn't tweeted a thing about the hearing today. And as we know, he still hasn't said Stormy's name. He's never mentioned her, which I also find fascinating. But you want to talk about the interview? Did you watch it?
I did. But first, before we move on, the Cohen thing is going to get wilder yet, because Cohen was involved in... He wasn't the lawyer for the Trump Organization. He was basically the only one without a Trump last name who acted as a Trump family member.
Right.
He was going around the world setting up deals. And most of these deals were heavily involved in money laundering and other scams. I mean, that's just a fact. That's not like... I mean, it's a fact. Anyone who's looked at these deals, looked at these towers he's had going on, I mean, it's open and shut case that what was happening there was illegal. Usually money laundering, but other kinds of illegality were involved as well. Mm-hmm. And that's got to come out. And also, apparently, Cohen is a massive fucking idiot who recorded his conversations about crimes. Yeah. He violated the Stringer Bell rule left
and also,
right.
By the way, is floating the idea of representing himself.
Oh, my God.
Go Cohen. Go
oh, my God.
Cohen.
I can't handle this too much.
Lawyers everywhere are so giddy. I just say let him handle it.
Did you see his tweet about how all lawyers are deflated and whatever it was?
Yeah, Trump thinks lawyers are very sad because now all of our attorney-client privilege, it basically is just not protected, and none of that is how that works. And yeah, none of us care. We're cool. We're
no,
good.
We
understand how this
we
works.
We care. We're just all very giggly about it.
We're giggly about it, yeah. No, I mean, meaning I don't feel threatened. in the same way that Cohen should. I'm on Twitter and I'm gonna click on Hannity because he is definitely trending.
All right, tell us what Hannity is tweeting right now. Live updates. See. This is a live podcast this week.
I guess he was on his radio show, so maybe he wasn't tweeting as this was going on. But it says, okay, he just right now tweeted about California bans troops from helping Border Patrol. Oh, okay. So the government of California just said, no, we're not going to allow the National Guard to come on our border. And before that, about half an hour ago, exactly what you said, that Cohen never represented me in any matter. I never retained him, received an invoice, or paid legal fees. Now, let me ask you this. Paying legal fees, I mean, that's not what creates an attorney-client privilege, right?
No, handing over a $10 bill, Saul Goodman style, does not make you an attorney-client relationship.
I think they're thinking that's like contract consideration type of stuff, which means Cohen, I mean, I don't know
you
what he's thinking.
You can't just call up your buddy who's an attorney and say, hey, give me some advice on this. Okay, attorney-client privilege, right? Okay, good. Yeah. Good to go.
But here's the thing, though. You know what? I say if he's publicly saying that there's no attorney-client privilege, that means, well, they can have all your stuff then.
Wait, is he
I don't
saying
know why...
there's no attorney-client relationship?
Okay, well, he's saying he never represented me in any matter. To me, that means there's no attorney-client. He actually told me that. Michael Cohen has never represented me in every matter. I have occasionally had brief discussions with him about legal questions about which I wanted his input and perspective. I assume those conversations were confidential, but to be absolutely clear, they never involved any matter between me and a third party. I mean, to me, when he says he's never represented me, that means there's no attorney-client privilege.
Does he think that you can have attorney-client privilege by saying, can I have it to an attorney? Like, does that mean, like, anytime I talk to someone, I just have to say attorney-client privilege? And
it's like a magic little,
it's a magic talisman.
I want a wand that says attorney-client privilege. I'm just going to, like, hit people with it.
You bring out the magic attorney-client stick. Like, okay, as of this moment, we're all attorney-client privileged here. Because you're an attorney, you have this power to, like, invoke protection against, like, compulsive powers. The government, yeah, no.
But he's, but I don't understand if he's saying that on one hand.
Go back to my theory that's totally unsubstantiated at this point. That actually maybe Sean Hannity was not the third client.
I cannot imagine the gall of attorneys who would lie to a judge in open court about something.
I can, and they sound a lot like Trump's or Michael Cohen's attorneys.
But this is not something they could get away with. I mean, even delay tactics. So what? I mean, like they can be outed, like, you know, whenever, and that would be. I mean, they'd be severely sanctioned. I don't even know what that would lead to. But anyway, it seems...
they might not know.
Very risky.
it doesn't mean necessarily the attorneys knew.
Oh, you think Cohen's just making it up?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I think Cohen's comment about how he might represent himself, like, suggests that there's things he can't tell his own attorneys.
Maybe he is his own third client. Maybe that's it.
This is like Inception. This is like a John Grisham novel.
Well, Hannity is like, he ain't my lawyer. So there's that. On the other hand, he's saying, I gave him $10, so I have attorney-client privilege. So they want it every way possible.
I'm also going to go ahead and apologize to listeners. My sister just dumped her dog off here like an hour ago and swore that he would be quiet. He is not being quiet. So if you hear that weird squeaking in the background, that's him.
I actually haven't heard anything. Okay, so he's been a good boy. Been a good boy so far. We did have a bit of a Twitter meltdown with the president yesterday because Comey's book dropped. And he did his first interview. He's doing, you know what, I'll be honest. I didn't watch the interview. I did read, I was following some of the live tweeting and I read some of the transcript. There's a part of me, first of all, I think Comey will not own up to the fact that he effed up. He made some really stupid decisions before the election and he won't own up to that. But also I want to be like, you know what? I don't think there was anything that was so shocking or revelatory in the interview other than him just like kind of taking the gloves off and calling Trump out for what he is. You know, he said that he treats women like a piece of meat. I mean, he called him like, you know, every kind of disparaging thing you could think of. But I don't think there was anything that we don't know already that he hasn't revealed before.
I mean, right? All that is pretty shocking. And also to hear it come straight from him is powerful. But I mean, at the end of the day, I'm with like Comey is a complicated figure. I don't think he is the villain in the story necessarily, but oh my God, what a sanctimonious, oblivious dumbass sometimes. And that's being too kind to him because I think he's far too smart to not realize what's going on. And again, I don't want to imply some kind of equivalence here because Comey is in no way equivalent to Trump. And what Trump is doing is entirely on a different scale beyond anything we can imagine. But Trump is also in presidency right now because of Comey.
Exactly. And that's something that he, you know, he's just not owning up to what he did there.
He did have one comment in the interview where he's like, he was asked, well, why didn't you disclose also about the Trump investigation? He's like, well, I wouldn't have been right because it was a private. And it's like, where was that logic when? And you know, in his book, apparently he does acknowledge that, or he says like he's not sure. He doesn't know if his decision making was affected by the fact that he assumed Hillary would win, therefore felt like it was better to go out and disclose this info. But he did say in the interview that at one point, I think with McCabe, he had a conversation where McCabe, I think it was, told him, man, boss, you can't win with this one. And he's like, yep, no, I can't. But the thing is, Comey kind of has won. Like, he's come out as this, like, portrayed as, like, you know, almost the hero in the narrative, whereas
I thought he was getting a lot of flack from a lot of folks online yesterday.
More so than he had been previously, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, I just didn't think there was anything that like we don't already know. I thought it was interesting. You know, he was asked about whether he thought that Russia has something on this president. I was hoping for a more equivocal answer, but he was kind of like, maybe. And I was like, well, that doesn't help.
He doesn't know. He doesn't know. But I think it's significant that he's acknowledging that like he does not rule the possibility out.
Yeah, he's saying it's possible. He's like, saying it's possible. He's like, okay. Yeah.
Maybe not, but he acts exactly as if they do.
Right.
So, and I think for me, at the end of the day, like what Comey's biggest failure is he's talking about how like, oh, he would have gotten all this flack. Like everyone would have hated him, whatever he did. But like as a leader, sometimes you have to take unfair criticism. Like the right thing to do is to do the thing that is right under the regulations, under common sense. And you know what? If you take flack for that, if partisans come after you for it, that's, you know, that's on you as a leader. You endure that. that's your role. And Comey totally advocated that. And he was like, I don't want to get unfairly criticized. And I say him, I honestly, it does seem like Comey's motivations were primarily about the FBI. He prioritized the FBI's institutional integrity or reputation above that of the United States.
Right, right. You know, he also was asked a question about impeachment, and I was surprised at his answer. He said, I hope the president is not impeached, basically. He said that it's, you know, I think this kind of pissed me off. He said, basically, you know what, the American voters voted for him and they have to make it right. Like, it's on them. It's kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody else should have to clean up the voters' mess. This is the voters' mess. So they have to get back and vote in the right person. And that was like the gist of his response. And I thought that was pretty rich.
Yeah, especially coming from him. I mean, I do get the instinct on some level, but Comey is the wrong person to bring that message. And also, you know, there's always the chance that we're not going to fix it. Like, clearly there's a deep sickness in America, but wishing for like a perfect world where we magically fix our democracy and from the inside without like any kind of dramatic upheaval seems unlikely at this point. And it's kind of a pipe dream, really. Like, we are in an ongoing crisis, and this is not going to get solved in a normal, smooth, non-jarring way. And Comey is living this fantasy land where his screw up isn't going to cause, like, you know, decades of upheaval in America, but it is.
And yeah, and also there's absolutely no course correction to combat what happened in the last election. I mean, Russia is still, I mean, there's just, they are still able to interfere in our next election. I mean, okay, you have Facebook that's maybe going to be a little more careful now, but I don't think that's going to be enough. I think there is just, there's too many ways. There are too many vulnerabilities in our system right now, that Russia is going to keep exploiting them. So I don't know how Comey thinks suddenly in a couple of years, you know, we can just make it that all go away. Like, we're working in some kind of vacuum here. I mean, like, this Pandora's box is open and vomiting out all kinds of stuff.
And again, it's not just external threats. There's an internal threat that was apparently is Comey recognized and is yet to be resolved, and that's the New York field office, which he did allude to several times in the interview, but took no responsibility for it. As if, like, you know, this is just the way of life, that the New York office was trying to leak to harm Hillary, and that's how it was, and he tried to fix it. But he did not acknowledge that that was, like, on him. Like, he's the leader of FBI. If he's taking actions because there's a field division that's trying to harm democracy in this way, that's a big deal too. And there was no ownership of that issue. And another issue that was sort of, I think it was referenced in the interview, it's hard to tell from Comey's language, but which I am very, very interested in hearing more about, is the Loretta Lynch thing. I've mentioned it before on the show, but it seems like at the heart of everything here, to the extent anything has a heart, this like multi-limbed, like behemoth of a case, is some Russian disinformation. What we know is that at some point in 2016, there was supposedly an email that was taken from the Russians. As in, the Russians like had it. We thought that we had like either, it's not clear how we got it, but we thought we had stolen it from the Russians. And it was an email from US people that the Russians supposedly had stolen. And it was between some people who were like sort of second level political connected people talking about Loretta Lynch, the attorney general at the time, and Clinton, and basically saying, oh yeah, Lynch assured, you know, Clinton that this was not going to go any further. And that email, what we know, it's fake. It was not real. The people involved didn't even know each other. Right. It was just crafted to make it look like there was something nefarious going on with the attorney general's office. And Comey will not talk about it. It is not very clear. He's very defensive about it when he does mention it. I think he believed it. I think he did.
Oh,
think
that's interesting.
Or like maybe he's right. He didn't believe it, like he says, but it still impacted his actions. He was afraid it would get leaked, and if Americans saw it, they'd be so outraged or like so lose so much faith in the system that it would cause a problem. So he was acting to counteract that, which is improper too. Like, whether he thought it was real or fake, he acted on the basis of it, and that was monstrously irresponsible and dangerous.
I can't believe this, Susan, because of the chaos of this entire day, that it totally slipped my mind that we actually
bombed Syria.
We actually had some military strikes this weekend.
Yeah.
Syria, yeah. I can't believe I forgot about that. I feel horrible.
It was a distraction from all this, and it didn't work. That's all it was, except for people who died because of it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened. So over the weekend, I think it was on Friday or Saturday, I'm not exactly sure when, the U.S., and actually it wasn't a unilateral strike, it was United States, U.K., and France together struck targets in Syria, I think mostly in and around Damascus. There was a lot of footage of it. It was kind of terrifying watching it. And apparently there were three targets in particular that the U.S. focused on. And it seems that Trump actually wanted a much more robust military action than just those limited strikes. But he was talked off the ledge, I guess, by Mattis and others. And he then tweeted out his mission accomplished. I mean, literally, he said mission accomplished, a tweet saying that, it was a perfectly executed strike and, mission accomplished. The mission was to... What's the mission? This is in response to the chemical attacks of a week earlier by Bashar Assad on Douma. And I think about 3 or 4 dozen folks, Syrians, dying from those chemical attacks. So if basically the red line is like, and Nikki Haley said, well, when our president draws a red line, he enforces the red line, meaning no chemical attacks. If this guy stops using chemical weapons, he's just going to kill them in more conventional ways. But there's no strategy here. And that's the frustration. I do think it's important to hold war crimes, people committing war crimes accountable. This sent a message. I don't know if it's going to make any difference in the long run, though. It's not part of a strategy.
That's the problem with limited strikes. This is not even really a partisan thing. There's a lot of support on all sides for this, that when someone commits human rights abuses like they're going on in Syria, you have to respond with military force. And then the way of doing that is limited strikes. But the evidence seems very thin that actually has the intended deterrence effect that its aim is. And especially in this case, I'm sure it did some damage. But at the same time, whether it's true or not...
I think 14 soldiers were killed. There were some limited, also some casualties too, but...
The leaders will assume that this was the motivation behind this was to distract from domestic issues for Trump. So if that's the case, they're not going to treat it like the kind of threat it's intended. The whole point of this limited strike deterrence message is undermined by what's going on at home.
Yeah. It was really interesting watching this stuff unfold online and people's reactions. And I'm going to be honest, I was one of those people. I was like, is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Do we want this? You have the issue of basically who's behind, this measure. Trump himself completely, he's completely unstable. He has no idea what he's doing. He's not fit to be commander in chief. Him wielding this kind of power is just scary in and of itself. But let's say Obama had done it. There's so much.
They would have impeached him.
You think they would have impeached? Well, there was that too, because they're saying that, but I will say this, that I've also read the analysis that this was not an act of war that required congressional authorization. These are limited strikes. It's not like we're actually going to war and deploying troops. So I don't know. I do think that after Bush's presidency, that probably holds. We've been doing this for more than a decade now. Yeah, and Obama's too, yeah. So it's hard to make the argument that when Trump does it, then suddenly... he's violated, congressional war powers. But at this point, I feel like, in terms of strategy, there's only two strategies here that can actually lead to any kind of resolution. One is that there is some kind of a international pressure, sanctions, shutting down all relations, starving the regime to force them to their knees, which would, by the way, just decimate the people of Syria, because Bashar Assad is not going to starve. His forces will not starve. It'll be the people who starve. We did this in Iran before. Or the other one is, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, is to finally just negotiate a ceasefire, negotiate peace, talk down the rebels, and just get this civil war to end. I see no way absent an actual ground war, an invasion, which nobody has the political will for, not in the West and not in that region, the rebels in Syria can defeat Bashar Assad. It's not going to happen.
It's not. And with Russia, Trump being subservient to them in all kinds of ways, I don't even know what. I don't think Trump knows what his end game is there. Like, Trump has no comprehension of actual. Like, he just wants it.
He doesn't even know what's going on. He doesn't even know what's happening. He really doesn't know what's happening. You know, and then you have Iran involved too. I mean, like, the only way I think for a resolution here is Bashar Assad's not going anywhere. He's just not. So recognizing that and helping negotiate a ceasefire and a peace at this point. I mean, of course, Bashar Assad is that man who will not let go. I mean, he's still going to execute and hunt down and find the people, you know, who led the uprising, who continue to lead the rebellion against him and probably execute them.
You know, well, there's no other ending here. It's just so depressing.
That's what it is, yeah. So at the end of the day, there has to be recognition that nobody's going to invade Syria to liberate Syria. So if that's not going to happen, then it's time to just, like, put down arms and you know, negotiate some kind of truce with Bashar Assad. But that's not on the radar right now, and I don't know what is. Nikki Haley also said the U.S. is locked and loaded to repeat these strikes, and I don't know if that just means only if there's a chemical weapons attack or just in general. NATO expressed its full support for the strikes, but again, it's just, so what? I don't think it's going to do anything.
But he's been gassing people all along, so, like, what's different now other than, like, Stormy Daniels and Cohen?
He's been gassing people, but I will say this. The two times that they... So, during the Obama administration, and Obama had said that chemical weapons are a red line, he did cross that line repeatedly during Obama's presidency. Obama did nothing. During the Trump presidency, there's been evidence that he's twice crossed it, and both times there have been these strikes. We did this a year ago, remember?
Yeah, so, exactly, almost.
Yeah, there has been a response from Trump, which I think, like, I don't want to, but I've got to credit him beyond Obama on this issue, but at the end of the day, it's kind of futile, and I think that's the problem. It's not really going to do anything.
Yeah, and the Russia issue is what it comes down to. If we had a coherent Russia strategy, maybe we could have a coherent Syria strategy. We don't, so we don't.
Speaking of Russia, maybe we just wrap up with this news. I just read that Nikki Haley had made an announcement that there are going to be some sanctions on Russia. And Trump was like, no, we're not going to put any additional sanctions on Russia. And this was in response to Russia's backing of Syria. So today, Haley went on Face the Nation and said that sanctions on their companies that are behind the equipment that, you know, is supplied to Assad and the chemical weapons would be announced today, Monday, by Steven Mnuchin. But then Trump, I guess, had a meeting with his national security advisors yesterday, and then he told them he was upset the sanctions were being officially rolled out, and he wasn't comfortable with executing them, and so that's that.
Well, not just that, but remember how, I can't even tell dates anymore, but a few weeks back, or maybe a month, I have no idea, but we, in response to the attacks in the UK, we expelled 60 diplomats.
The diplomats.
Which was a very strong, like, robust move, and people were surprised because it wasn't, like, the strongest move he could have made, but it was a pretty strong move. Well, apparently, Trump didn't know they were doing that. Mm. And when he found out, he was very upset. Apparently, there were curse words involved. So basically, it was like his staffers pulled that without him knowing what they were doing.
Well, actually, I mean, what I read was that he was told that the response was going to be proportional and that the U.S. was not going to look like it was responding more strongly than Europe allies. But it turned out that, like, the U.K. expelled a lot less and the France. And so his staff was telling him, well, our response is equivalent to the total European response. And he's like, that's not what I want. I mean, basically, what he cared about was just not looking too tough on Russia.
And not looking too weak either. And also, he did follow up by saying that the 60 of their expelled can be replaced by new ones.
Oh, well, so, what?
Yeah, it wasn't even, like, I mean, let's be real. Of course, Russia has something on Trump. We've been able to know this from before the election. Look at the friggin' presidential debate with Hillary when he couldn't say anything mean about Putin. Yeah. I mean, we're still not at the point where we can openly acknowledge it. But, like, when someone acts in every conceivable way as if they're being blackmailed or if Russia has, you know, leverage over them, even
they
when
probably are.
They do, like, there's something. It doesn't have to be PP tape. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's not, because God knows we deserve not to have to see that shit, but there's something. I mean, there's finances, you don't even need anything more, because we know that there are lots of communications with the Russians that haven't leaked yet, and they're very damaging to Trump when they come out, and Russia knows about them because they're one of the parties. So they had the Trump Tower meeting in their pocket for 6 months. They could have released that at any time. I mean, they had compromise.
Oh, and wasn't there some news about Cohen in Prague just recently?
Oh, maybe. It's a really unsourced article. So that McClatchy came out with a thing that says Mueller hasn't given evidence that suggests that Michael Cohen was in Prague after all, as it said in the Steele dossier.
Yeah.
But the sourcing was weird, and no one else has followed up with the story. So I am not sold on it.
It's not confirmed. Okay, hasn't been verified. All right.
It sounds like someone gave information to Mueller and then also gave it to McClatchy.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, anything else we want to touch about before we wrap up for this week? It was kind of we started off very breathless and
this is all happening live. Wait, hold up. Let's see. I'm going to tune back into Cohen, see what's going on. Cohen. I can't even talk anymore.
I really do hope it's Hannity, that third client, and I have a feeling that if it is, it will involve some shady payments through that LLC, but it will also involve other stuff because, you know, maybe Hannity's got some dealings, some shady financial dealings too.
Definitely. And also look at how Hannity's been reporting on the Michael Cohen story.
Right.
Without disclosing that they have some kind of relationship. And also Hannity is in the mix of, I mean, who knows what's going on, but Hannity is clearly not just a news guy. He is connected by business and other dealings with people in Trump's orbit.
Right. All right. Well, let's see how this hearing. So what's going to happen in this hearing? Is the judge going to rule today? You think it'll take a little time? I don't know what's going on.
I've missed everything in the past hour. So,
okay. Anything could have happened between now and then.
We could go off this call and turn on the internet and be like,
never mind.
Okay,
we're starting all over.
We no longer have a DOJ.
That's right. Yeah, and we haven't really commented on that craziness of that Trump's team, the President of the United States, is making the argument in court that the DOJ is not to be trusted. His own Department of Justice is not to be trusted. I think that's crazy.
The deep state. Well, he has to, because one of them, Trump can't survive this investigation, so he's got to stop it.
Too late for that.
We are very much in the danger zone, have been for a long time, and... Yeah.
You think Rosenstein's getting fired this week?
So one of the first things, even before Comey got fired, there was an article, I think it was from Benowitz, talking about how he was talking to Comey about Rosenstein, who had just been appointed and was in place, and talking about how he was. And apparently Comey's response was, Rosenstein's good, he's solid, but he's a survivor.
Mm.
No one hangs on that long as he has without doing things along the way. And Comey, I think, was very astute in how he judged Rosenstein. I think he's proven it over and over again that he is a survivor. Mm-hmm. He's a flexible, not particularly, I don't want to say righteous, probably a good thing in the current environment. He's willing to make compromises on things. Like when Trump asked him for loyalty, he said, sure, I'm on your team, boss, whatever. There was no sainthood streak in him like Comey has. And I think in a lot of ways, Rosenstein's the right man for the right time. Not necessarily the most heroic or admirable normally, but I am really banking on his surviving skills to keep him there just a little bit longer.
Yeah. And I think Mueller is too. I mean, Comey's a little drama.
Yeah.
Comey's a little drama. By the way, Sean Hannity just tweeted again about his thing. So maybe we could wrap up with this. He tweets, in response to some wild speculation, let me make clear that I did not ask Michael Cohen to bring this proceeding on my behalf. I have no personal interest in this proceeding. And in fact, asked that my de minimis discussions with Michael Cohen, which dealt almost exclusively about real estate, not be made a part of this proceeding.
Real estate, you say?
Real estate.
You mean Hannity's talking to a guy whose real estate experience consists almost entirely of money laundering? That is very interesting. No wonder.
Stupid are these people? What is he doing?
Oh my God, they're so dumb. That's the part. That's...
It'll be a great week. All right, it's only Monday. Or is it Tuesday? I don't even know anymore. It's Monday.
Idiots are actually got away with this so far. And they can't get away with it forever, but they can destroy a lot of things in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. So I think, Susan, you're not going to be on next week's show, right?
I am not.
You're going to be dipping out. All right, but we have a couple of really excellent guests coming up for next week, and we'll revisit the dumpster fire at that time. Anyhow.
Although, if Mueller gets fired or something, I reserve the right to demand emergency podcast recording. We'll make it work.
All right. I can do middle of the night podcast recording. That's fine. The baby's asleep then.
I'm going to call you at like 3 a.m. one night and be like, it just happened, Robbie. Get on Skype right now.
Get on Skype. I'll probably be awake anyways. So we can do this. All right. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in a week.
Bye.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.